a gun in the face.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
Started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
You can binge all of the episodes of Hope and Darkness on KSLPodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
At KSL Outdoors, this is Utah's most listened to program about hunting, fishing, camping, and high adventure. All the gear you need to buy, where the fish are biting, and secret places in Utah and around the world where you can have a blast. KSL Outdoors with host Tim Hughes on KSL News Radio 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
And we welcome you back to hour number two and the final one here for another week of KSL Outdoors Radio. Always a pleasure to have you with us. Boy, I can't think of a better thing to do than to get to the high country and out of this heat down here in the valley. It turned fast for me, Russ. To go from 70-something and even 60s last weekend right into the 90s, my body's not ready for this.
Yeah, I ran into a little heat in Wyoming over the weekend. Not too bad, just enough to put the air conditioning on in the Jeep. So, you know, only because I didn't want the noise from the windows being down, I guess, primarily.
Yeah. Speaking of the heat, I'm sure it was quite a bit warmer in southern Utah last weekend over the Memorial Day weekend, and that probably led to quite a few people getting out and enjoying the outdoors. But it also usually leads to some problems in one way or the other, and we wanted to talk about work that was being done by the folks with the Division of Wildlife Resources that have been tasked with inspecting boats coming and going from various bodies of water, and specifically down at Lake Powell last weekend. To help us sort all that out, Crystal Tucker is the Aquatic Invasive Species Operations Sergeant, which she agrees is tough to get on a business card if you're looking for titles. Welcome. It's nice to have you.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Tell us what an average day is like for you, and then we'll talk about how your weekend was last week.
Oh, sure. Well, I've only been doing this for about a month now, and it's safe to say, especially amid COVID, that there's nothing routine about this job. One of my biggest tasks as the operations sergeant for AIS is just making sure that around the state that we have our technicians able to use the equipment properly, that they've been trained, and we all know what kind of protocols we need to do to defend our waters from these quagga mussels, which are pretty nasty little mussels that can cause some serious damage.
Yeah, it's interesting you put it in those terms. We talk about that when we're reporting the news during the week, that this battle with COVID is a war in and of itself, and we sort of have the same battlefront going on with these quagga mussels and trying to keep it contained like we are the virus itself.
Yeah, it's been kind of a 1-2 punch this summer for sure. But we have awesome people working with the division, and our boaters and our stakeholders all really care about this issue, and we couldn't do it without their support.
And Russ, I'm sure we speak on behalf of all those that love to play on our lakes and our streams and our reservoirs, that we appreciate people like Crystal being out there to do the work.
Yeah, we do. We do. It's always good to have them out. Always good to see them out there around the lakes and stuff. And know that people are hopefully staying aware of the rules.
Yeah. Let's talk about how big of a job this was for you guys down there. And I would imagine, just like we've seen at the state parks and the national parks, which we will talk more about in the coming hour with Bob Grove, you've probably seen a rush to the reservoirs, haven't you? And particularly Lake Powell.
Oh, absolutely. We were seeing, I was actually down there helping with an administrative checkpoint on the bullfrog side. And we were seeing license plates from people from all over the country just you know, itching to get out. And Lake Powell does, it does have a lot of people that enjoy coming out there. But this year, I believe we probably hit some record numbers.
Is Lake Powell still the only body of water in Utah that we have a quagga problem?
Yes, and we're very proud of that with the division. We've had several lakes in the past who have had quagga mussels be in there, and we were able to not necessarily remove, but remove them from the suspect water body through a period of years of testing and yielding negative results. So we're very proud of that and trying to keep it contained to Lake Powell.
Yeah, and Russ, just to give you an idea of how big of a day this would be for those doing the inspections, it looks like 5,718 boats with 142 decontaminations were done over this past weekend. How does that compare with years past?
So last year, it's slightly below. Last year on the Memorial Day weekend, statewide, we had 6,570 inspections and 171 boats decontaminated. And I think the reason why that was is because we had a little bit of poor weather that might have kept some people away in more of the northern portion of the state. But it's still nothing to sneeze at having the amount of boats, because those are each being personally inspected by our team of technicians. They do a fantastic job.
Yeah. Now, go ahead, Russ.
Well, I was going to ask Crystal, how and when do you quarantine a boat?
That's a great question. So our procedures for quarantine is going to be basically just going through the first steps that everybody has to do, especially when they're leaving Lake Powell, is that they have to have their boat inspected at one of our mandatory inspection stations. And during that inspection, our technicians are trying to see if they can find any visible quagga mussels. If they do see ones that are larger, which kind of indicate that they're adult status, and they're attached by what's called Bissell threads, it launches us into a decontamination process, which is a hot water wash. And we do that continuously throughout all the portions of the boat where these mussels tend to thrive. And if we still have an issue concerning that our decontamination might have still had a few of those mussels left behind, it'll trigger a quarantine that's going to essentially have the boat owner keep their boat at home, and they may not launch it until the dry time has been completed, whether it's 7 days in the summer, 18 days currently, or if they have a very complex boat, it will take a full 30 days, just so we're making sure there's no biological harm to the next environment. And we do realize that that's quite a strain on our boaters, you know, when we have a fairly short summer. And any time that they can help us by doing, having our technicians do these inspections and doing the clean drain dry on their own, if our inspection stations are not open, we really appreciate it. It's everybody's responsibility to keep our waters clear and clean.
As a former boat owner, it really is nice that you recognize that, because I remember, you know, paying that monthly payment, paying for storage, paying for the winterization, paying for this and that in the worst of winters, and you only get a handful of days, really, to get out there and play. And so if yours has to be quarantined, my gosh, that's an even bigger blow. I want to make sure these numbers are not misunderstood, though. The 5,718 boats and 142 decontaminations were nationwide, but Lake Powell itself, 1,319 boats were inspected at the stations there. Here's the bad news. During those inspections, mussels were discovered on 118 of those. Is that a high number?
That's not uncommon for what we see off of Lake Powell. You'll see a lot of those dead mussels that they'll tend to pick up as they're getting them off of the ramps and everything. We call them hydrostatics. They love to stay in the sea strainer, and that's one of the biggest points of a boat that we remind our boating public is to make sure you clean that sea strainer, because that's where a lot of them are going to go through your engine and they're going to dump into that. And that's where a lot of times we're going to have a decontamination and possibly a quarantine trigger, just because you have those shells or mussels in your sea strainer.
Just imagine if 118 boats ended up at 118 different waters or on 118 different days, the kind of problem we would have around the state. It's a little worrisome, but good that we have these kinds of inspections going on. For the most part, Are people cooperative? Are boat owners cooperative?
Oh, absolutely. When I was down there for that two-day administrative checkpoint, there was far more compliance, about 93% compliance, I believe, when I broke down the numbers, and more people saying, thank you for what you guys are doing. We appreciate you. We know it's not fun being on this hot asphalt and doing this, but everybody seems to be pretty willing to chip in and do their part. And if that occurs, I mean, I think we've got a great track record so far of keeping these mussels out of our waters and just trying to keep them contained as much as possible to Lake Pell.
Yeah. Having said that, how many people get in trouble for just blowing right past an inspection spot?
Well, as many as we can catch, really. You know, if we're there and can document it, such as this weekend, we did have 42 individuals at Lake Powell receive citations. And that was for primarily either not stopping at that inspection station when it is open, and there's numerous signs down there at Lake Powell stating when those hours of operation are, or if they're transporting their boats with the drain plugs still in. It is currently a law that if you're leaving Lake Powell or any infested water, that they are required to take that plug out.
Hmm. I know I've shared this story on the air before, Russ, but I had not pulled a boat in many years. I sold mine a lot of years ago. But I rented a boat, and so I wasn't used to pulling it, and I was headed up to Strawberry. And I zoomed past, and I noticed that these guys were running for their cars to come after me. And I did
pretty determined.
I did a quick turnaround and pulled back in one of the pullouts, I think, there just to make sure I wasn't in trouble. I did see that 54 were actually cited. You mentioned 42. What kinds of other things have people been cited for?
If they're at the water and they're not filling out a certificate form, just to verify that they are clean, drain, and dry and leaving it on their dash, that is a citable offense. Sometimes we'll give out these little notices that kind of say, hey, you're in our system now, and the next time we'll likely be a warning or a citation. Other things could be on these boats where they were transported and they do have mussels. That's certainly an offense we take seriously, and ultimately, it is no different than our fishing regulations or traffic violations. It is that boater's ultimate responsibility to make sure that their boat is clean, drained, dry, and free of mussels.
Yeah.
So we don't want people – we don't enjoy giving citations out, but we certainly would like everybody to be responsible for their boats just so we're not harming these waters.
And you know, it goes without saying, if you're going to put a boat into Lake Powell, you must go through this exercise, even if you don't plan on taking the boat to other bodies of water. True?
That is true. Yep.
Yeah.
And that includes kayaks and anything else that's been on the water.
Yes. Yeah, so in Utah, we like to kind of jokingly say if it floats, it's a boat. And a funny thing we had this week is we actually had an inflatable little bull, similar to the ones that you see at rodeos. And we went ahead and flipped that around and made sure that that was inspected and decontaminated. And luckily, the people were really good. They were a good sport about it. And, you know, most of the time, I think it just comes from education. If anybody's going to be boating at Lake Powell, there are special regulations. We just encourage them to go on our website at wildlife.utah.gov and STD of the sea and take a look.
Whatever, float your boat.
Exactly.
Even if it's an inflatable bull. Boy, we sure appreciate everything you and your team do. Crystal Tucker, thanks for the update, and glad you survived the Memorial Day weekend.
Oh, there's more to come. Thank you so much, Russ and Tim. Appreciate being on the show.
Yeah, all right. We'll stand by, Russell. We'll take a break here. We'll come back with more of KSL Outdoors in just a minute.
A stranger with a gun came upon two teens taking pictures under a rising full moon. But violence is only the beginning of this story.
Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and I've spent my career talking about how lives are undone by violence. The Letter is a podcast about how lives are remade. Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Nice to have you listening this morning. Weekend here in northern Utah, and if you think it's hot here, imagine what it's doing down in southern Utah. It's Dixie. They were looking at 104 to 107 degrees on Thursday, and it was expected to get even warmer than that. Again, a reminder that we're recording the show on a Thursday, but Bob Grove, do you ever get used to temperatures like that? I guess you do.
Well, yeah, you kind of have to. If you're going to live here, you better.
Yeah.
But it takes me a while. You know, coming out of the winter, you know, when 70 degrees starts feeling hot, so it takes a little while to adjust to it, but by July, I think we're there.
So you don't have far to go. But, man, it heated up fast. Russ Smith still with me. Bob Grove is on. I had planned on having Bob join us for a little postmortem on Memorial Day weekend at our state parks and our national parks because I've heard it's been busy. But I decided to have him jump on early with us here. And you reminded me during the break, Russ, that I had teased in the last hour this story of an elk hunter who found his lost bull elk. He was reunited after 6 years. And I want to make sure we get this in here for this segment. And then, Bob, if you can hang on, we'll talk about the state and national parks after the bottom of the hour news. But this story, I don't know if you actually saw it, was on the Division of Wildlife Resources Facebook page. A story of Steve Smith, who 6 years ago, so this would have been, 2011, I think? 2013. My math is terrible.
That long.
When he actually was out on an elk hunt, took a shot, knew that he had hit the bull, but after looking for it and having some help in looking for it, for most of that day and maybe that weekend, they just couldn't find it. And I'll be darned if 6 years later he wasn't reunited. So I'll let him tell the story. His name is Steve Smith.
Back in 2012, I had a Boulder archery elk tag. And after hunting for quite a while, I was able to find this bull on a water hole. And as luck would have it, he came in. Circumstances weren't optimal, and long story short, I made a bad shot. I hit him back, the bull ran off, and after a couple days of looking for it, I wasn't able to find it. A guy that was with me hunting down there at the same time that I just happened to run into, he helped me look for it, hoping that we could just turn him up, and no luck. Well, that was 2012, and then Saturday morning, my phone rang, and I recognized the name, and I got a chill down my spine, because there'd only be really one reason why he would be calling me. And sure enough, his daughter had been down there camping on the Boulder unit, and went for a hike with her husband, and they stumbled across this bull in the thick timber where you just wouldn't be thinking to take a leisurely stroll. 6 years later, there's the bull. When I saw his number and I answered the phone, I said, "Dude, are you freaking kidding me?" And he says, "No, we found your bull." And I started to choke up. If you've ever hit an animal and lost it, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. It wears on you, grinds on you, you worry about it, you think, why am I such an idiot? Why didn't I wait? Why didn't I make a better shot? But to know the bull died quick and to recover it, and now we have the story I can tell my kids about, can share with you guys, just incredible. He did say it was still heavy. I'm blown away.
I'm blown away
that it's not completely eaten. I'm blown away that no one found it with how crazy shed hunting is in Utah. It's a miracle, really.
Well, I can't believe 6 years old and it's still brown.
Yeah.
That's what's really cool, too.
Unbelievable. Justin was there with me. Helped look, and he taught his daughter well. They're just great people. I can't say enough about them. And that's what hunting really about, is guys looking out for other guys, because this bull means a tremendous amount to me. I can't count how many days I've thought about this elk in the past 6 years since wounding it. One of the coolest sportsman stories that you're ever going to hear. If it wasn't for Justin and his daughter, there really wouldn't be much of a story. It'd just be another story of a wounded elk that ran off and died in the trees, and no one ever got to appreciate it and take it home and have a cool story. But thanks to them, that's what this story is all about.
Boy, you listen to that. There are a couple of things that jump out at me. First of all, the fact that the one guy that was hunting with him was helping him look 6 years ago, and then that guy's daughter goes back to the same place and happens to be the one that stumbles onto this bull.
Amazing story.
Yeah. And they know it's his bull because his arrow, the shaft on it, is still there. And so they reunited him with his bull. And here's the other thing I take away from it, guys, and that is that people often will paint hunters as these cold-hearted people that go out with their guns and shoot living animals. Listen to the emotion in his voice and how often he said he thought of this bull that he knew he wounded, and he continued to be haunted by what that bull may have been going through out there.
That's an amazing story. I can't imagine. I get emotional just losing my glasses and finding them again.
Well,
I do that a couple times a day.
At least you found them.
I think Russ hides his own Easter eggs every year now.
I think so.
That's a good deal.
I mean, just the fact that elk was intact.
Yeah.
Is pretty amazing in itself.
Well, and you want to see this. The rack is amazing. It was a gigantic bull taken at the archery hunt, limited entry archery, and I have shared it over to our Facebook page. So just go to our Facebook, KSL Outdoors Radio. Make sure you put radio on there and take a look at it. Listen to the story again, and seeing the elk even makes it a better story. We need to break. We've got a news update on the half hour. Bob's going to stick around, and we'll talk about what the Memorial Day weekend was like for our state and national parks, at least as far as we know, coming up.